question is, what motivation would the Soviets have for doing that? Just to suppress their true identity and confuse them?
Right. The average bulldog has more Greek blood. It's crazy. Yeah, well, I guess Russia, you know, I guess the Slavs wanted to, the Russians, the powers that be, just wanted to, my talk show just crashed, just wanted to consolidate control over the area and over the people, so they re-educated them as Macedonians. I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning is, but they did it. Khrushchev did it. Basically, it's a program that started in the 40s and 50s.
What happened to the original Macedonians? Were they chased out, killed off, or bred out?
Well, it's a combination of things, because the Greeks were overrun by the Turks, and a lot of Greeks, it seems that about half the Greek people may have maintained their blood pretty well. I mean, I know Greeks that you would not know were not white. I've met Greeks with blonde hair, blue eyes, blonde hair, brown eyes. They're white. I would never think that they weren't white. But I've met a lot of Greeks also that look like Jews or like Turks. They're swarthy. They got big hook noses. They got sloping foreheads. And they're really Turks, but they think they're Greeks.
A lot of people in southern Italy and Sicily, they claim they're Italian, but they look like they just got off a boat from Haifa or Istanbul.
Right. Exactly. And they're really Jewish or Arab by blood.
Well, how many people today claim to be American despite the fact that they're not white?
Yeah, for real. Proud to be an American.
It's disgusting. And we bring that on ourselves. I mean, ever since biblical times, we've been identifying ourselves by geography. You know, the tribe of Benjamin was almost wiped out because of the sons of Belial. Belial's another Hebrew word that means mixed.
Oh, I see.
Okay? And the sons of Belial, that the children of Benjamin were protecting, were Canaanites that happened to live in the land of Benjamin.
Okay.
So the children of Benjamin, the whole tribe was almost wiped out because they allied themselves with these Canaanites that they just happened to, you know, because they lived in the land. Okay, homie, we got your back.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And a whole tribe was almost wiped out because of it. That's what that phrase, sons of Belial. You look up that word Belial in Strong's Concordance, and there's a group of words that mean, it means worthless, but because it means mixed. If you're mixed, you're worthless.
Yeah.
That's why they're called the sons of Belial. That's why Christ has no concord with Belial.
Yeah, and Jezebel set up the sons of Belial. Yeah.
Yeah, it appears in the Old Testament about 10 times. It only appears in the New Testament. Paul makes this statement in 2 Corinthians chapter 6.
Well, can light and darkness coexist, then how can Christ and Belial agree?
Right, something just like that, yeah, right.
And he tells us to not be yoked with the unbelievers.
Well, that's not what that says. I'm going to pull out my New Testament, and I got it up here already.
All right.
My Greek translation is very different, and I can establish that it's scholarly incorrect, and that the King James, who take an adjective, which means faithless, and translate it as a noun, is exactly what happens there, all right? And then they take a word that they don't understand at all, heterozugios, which appears in the Septuagint of yoking thy oxen with diverse kinds.
Okay.
Okay, and my translation of that passage is, do not become yoked together with untrustworthy aliens. That's what it says. That's what the Greek says, and I could prove it. For what participation has justice and lawlessness? Do not become yoked together with untrustworthy aliens. And I wrote a treatise on why it says that.
Who are the most untrustworthy aliens in the world?
Well, any non-whites or any aliens are untrustworthy. Yeah, you know, and this is, you know, we could argue about anthropology, and we could argue about the origins of species, but there's only two races in the world. The Adamic race, which Yahweh created, and everybody else, which Yahweh didn't create. I mean, Yahshua Christ himself divides the world into two camps, wheat and tares.
Yeah.
And again, he divides the world into two camps, sheep and goats.
Absolutely. So you're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
Your name is written in the book of life or it's not.
Yeah, God.
So there's only
heaven.
Two races. There's us and there's them.
True.
That's what it boils down to. There's two races of people, us and them, wheat and tares, sheep and goats, whites and non-whites.
Sons of God and the sons of the devil.
Right, the children of Belial. Because even if Eli is right and there were hominids in the fifth day creation, basically, none of them, they've all been mixed. They've all been mixed with other races. With us, with the Jews, with the whatever, with each other.
But they'd just be worthless people at this point in time.
Exactly. So even if there were hominids, and I doubt there were, but even if there were hominids in the fifth day creation, beasts of the field, originally in the creation, I mean, they've been here since before we have. No doubt they've been mixed before we got here.
Yeah.
The other races are all a product of bastardization in one way or another. So there's only two races. There's us and there's them. There's sheep and there's goats.
So
there's
who did
it say?
Who did Seth marry?
Well, you know, if you look at my Christogenia overview pages on my website, I believe personally that first, it's absolutely definite in Hebrew that the Adam of Genesis 1:26-28, that word man is Adam, and it's used in the same exact form as Adam in Genesis 2:7, that the Hebrew translators, the King James translators transliterated there. They didn't translate it man. They left it Adam as a personal name. And the Adam in Genesis 5:1, he created them male and female and called their name Adam. They're all the same Adam. Yahweh created one race of man, and it's Adam, and they're white, period. Okay? Now, that is inarguable because you could look at the forms of the Hebrew words that are all the same. Paul says there's the first man, Adam, and there's a second man, Adam. Now, what's not inarguable is this. This can be debated. I believe that Genesis 1, Yahweh named a race, created a race, and called it Adam. In Genesis 2, Genesis chapters 2, 3, and 4 are not a historical account. They are a parable of things that represent history.
So the fall race as a whole.
Exactly. Exactly. And the race fell is portrayed as falling through the patriarch Adam. And there has to be a first one when you create a race. But Yahweh planted a garden. He created a race. So who knows how many were in the original number? Was it just two? Or do the two just, or is that just a parable for the rest of them? I believe the two are a parable for the rest of them. I believe that Genesis 2, 3, and 4 can't be taken exactly literally. They're a parable. They represent something true and historical. I express this in my overview pages. I spell it out, my reasoning for it. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but it is what it is. Yahweh created a race. And Adam can only choose a woman. You know, none of the women that were here before were meet for spouses. That just represents that we are not to race mix. It shows us how close to us in kinship our wives should be.
How do the universalists think that all the races came from two people? They believe, like the Judeos and the Evangelicals, that it was just absolutely Adam and Eve and that it's not representative of a whole people in an allegorical form, but it's two literal people. If they were the same race or if they were different races, wouldn't we all be sort of a cafe latte?
Well, you know, they
coffee color today?
Through the creationism versus evolution argument, they have the two camps so polarized that nobody considers the details.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? People don't get to that point. Because you're either a creationist that believes God made everything in 6 days, 6,000 years ago, or you're an evolutionist and there's no God.
Yeah.
And that describes 98% of humanity, of white humanity anyway.
What if you don't believe in either?
Well, then you're just lost, I guess. I don't know. There are people that don't believe in either, but there's so few, I guess they're not properly defined.
Because I would say that certainly God made man, but not according to how the six-day young earth evangelical creationists say so.
Well, exactly. You know, that word day in Genesis can be translated age and be more proper. It's more proper to translate it age simply because the sun and the moon weren't created till the fourth day. So how could you have 3 days, the first 3 days in the first place?
Well, exactly. How are they measuring a day? Is it a 24-hour day? If there's no sun, and a day is measured in the amount of time it takes us to, you know, go around.
I think the creation really is represented, it really represents six time periods. And each one of them could have been a billion years. It don't matter. It don't matter. They probably weren't even all the same length. The first one could have been 20 billion years. You know what I mean? It don't matter. It's six ages. It's a representation in a parable of creation. It's not a scientific account. And it shows us six stages of creation.
Or more recreation, because the very first verse says the beginning.
Well, that's highly debatable because the form of the verb indicates in Hebrew that it doesn't say that.
Oh, I see.
And I understand, and I know what Swift and Comparate taught on that, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying that there's more evidence that says that it's not a recreation. And where the King James says replenish the earth,
yeah,
that's a straight sham. It should never say replenish the earth, because the Hebrew word is not reduplicated, and it doesn't mean replenished in any way. Even if you look that word up in Strong's Concordance, it defines it as to fill, not to refill.
Well, if you're refilling, it would imply that it was totally empty.
If you're filling it, it implies it was empty in the first place. If you're refilling it, it kind of helps those people that believe that that word in Genesis 1 says that the earth was made void, meaning some global catastrophe happened.
Yeah, the tohu vavohu.
You see, basically what I believe, and Eli would agree with me, I think, on most points of this, but we do have some divergences. What I believe is that the fallen angels were one of those races of you know, the Neanderthals. I'm sorry, the Cro-Magnon man has a larger brain capacity than we do.
Okay.
And there's a direct correlation between cranial capacity and intelligence. And the Cro-Magnon cranial capacity is about 100 milliliters larger than ours. In turn, the average white cranial capacity of real whites is about 300 to 400 milliliters larger than an Oriental, and about 500 or 600 milliliters larger than a black.
Okay.
Okay, so there's basically a correlation. There's a definite correlation between intelligence and cultural achievement and cranial capacity.
The hierarchy.
Oh, yeah, and the Cro-Magnon cranial capacity is larger than ours by about 8%, I think. You know, it's 100 milliliters out of about 12 to 1,300. Now, I believe that they are probably the race called fallen angels in the Bible.
In Nephilim.
Yeah, and they were pretty much disappeared 15 to 20,000 years before we appeared. Now, of course, the Jews and the evolutionists say that there was intermixing between modern man and Cro-Magnon man. And they say that because what I would really say is that there was intermixing between Cro-Magnon man and beasts. And that created all these other races. And then we came along. Then we were created 15,000 years later. Our predecessors aren't necessarily our ancestors. And people confuse the two so easily. Predecessors are not ancestors. When the white people came here to Plymouth, Massachusetts, the Indians that were already buried in the ground ain't their ancestors. They're their predecessors. There's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Just because we dig a bone out of the ground and it's 99.9% of its genes are like ours, that don't mean it's our daddy or our grandfathers or our ancestors.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the Jews trick people. They trick dumb Christians with six-letter words all the time. I'm sorry. It's easy. That's what I believe. And I believe that Yahweh planted a plural white race here, and that the patriarch Adam is singled out as representing the fall of that race. That's my personal belief, that the beginning chapters of Genesis are a parable. And I wrote a paper, my overview section explains that, and I wrote a paper on the race mixing of the fallen angels, and that's called, it has an odd title because I really wanted to address Genesis chapter 6 verses 1 through 4 and correct the record on that. Uh-huh. So the name of that paper is called The Problem with Genesis 6, 1 to 4. And I wrote a paper that proves beyond all doubt that sex is being spoken about in Genesis chapter 3. And I actually take elements of the Epic of Gilgamesh, which has very similar language to Genesis chapter 3.
Oh.
Remarkably similar. To prove that Genesis 3 is all about sex. And that's called Shemitic Idioms in Genesis chapter 3. And I quote very extensively from the Epic of Gilgamesh there and explain it in context with the Bible.
All right, and about the cranial capacity, can I interject here? I found a chart from the 19th century, The Inequality of Human Races by Count Charles Arthur de Goibeneau. And
sure.
He has a chart here by the American scholar Dr. Morton, adopted by Dr. Karras, and several other doctors had a hand in this. To show the difference of races, Morton and Karras started from the idea that the greater the size of the skull, the higher the type to which the individual belonged, and they set out to investigate whether the development of the skull is equal in all the human races. To solve this question, Morton took a certain number of heads belonging to whites, Mongols, Negroes, and Redskins of North America. He stocked all the openings with cotton except the foramen magnum and completely filled the inside with carefully dried grains of pepper. He then compared the number of grains in each. This gave him the following table. White races, average number of grains, 87. Maximum number of grains, 109. Minimum number of grains, 75. Yellow races, Mongols, average number, 83. Maximum number, 93. Minimum number, 69. Malays, a subset of the Asiatic peoples, average, 81. Maximum, 89. Minimum, 64. Redskins, average, 82. Maximum, 100. Minimum, 60. Negroes, average, 78, maximum, 94, minimum, 65. So your average Negro is on par, close to being on par with the lowest of the whites.
Yeah, the retarded white man. Yeah.
Well, right. The numbers I remember, I'm not sure if they're right or not, the numbers I remember for average cranial capacity for Cro-Magnons is like 1,300 milliliters. For whites, it's like 1,150 to 1,200. For Asians, it's like 900 to 1,000. For Negroes, it's like 700 to 800. And they're averages. So, of course, some of the people with high levels in the other races are going to approach the averages of the higher races. You know what I mean? I mean, there's always going to be a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
But we generally have much larger cranial capacities than the Orientals and the Negroes. And the Cro-Magnons, it's shown, and by archaeologists, have larger cranial capacities than we do.
Absolutely. And historically, anthropologists knew about this, and they were not shy from admitting it. But here's the preface by George Mosse in this modern translation of the book. Written in the mid-19th century as an attempt to explain the rise and fall of civilizations, Goibeneau's The Inequality of Human Races was to provide the classic synthesis of ideas which largely determine the nature of modern racist thought. Drawing upon anthropology, linguistics, and history, Goibeneau constructed an intellectual edifice in which race explained everything in human history, past, present, and future. The Inequality of Human Races is the basic document which puts forward racism as a worldview. But if we go back, everything's about race, isn't it? It's all about race. Race,
yeah.
And Trump.
Or it should be.
It is the way it should be.
Yeah.
And we have great achievement as a white race. Mm. As a contiguous, as a contiguous, unpolluted race. Look at all the industry of the 1900s and all the invention of the 1800s and 1900s.
Yeah, every bridge, building, government.
And you know, we've almost come close to this before. There are things found in the Near East that are believed to be batteries.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there are ceramic containers found in the Near East that held liquid that had the remnants of vinegar in them. And copper wires strips of copper metal that they call wires running from the top to the bottom of them that can only be explained, the existence of these things can only be explained that it was a battery of some sort that held the charge.
Wow.
And they explain scientifically that it would hold the charge. There's, you know, Diodorus Siculus writes of Archimedes in the second century, and I actually have this in a book. He writes this explanation that this Archimedes, who was a brilliant man, he actually cut lenses out of glass and set them up, large lenses, and set them up that they may set a ship on fire.
I remember reading about that.
Wow.
And this is the second century BC. And this is the perfect description of a laser.
Absolutely, and they performed cataract surgery on eyes back in the Roman times. They had one Greek engineer was very close to making a steam engine.
Wow.
Right, Pistol Yahweh, he's asking about ancient technology with electrogravity. All I'm going to say is that there are things that are unexplained with the building of the pyramids and the moving of large stones, and I admit that, but I personally am a very pragmatic kind of guy when talking about the ancient world. And I really only like to talk about what I can show in a book. If I can't show it to you in a book, I really don't like to talk about it.
Well, this really goes to show that everything comes full circle, you know, that everything to be has always been, and there truly is no new thing under the sun.
Well, right, and that's absolutely true. But I believe that is the intelligence and creativity of our race is always going to achieve.
Yeah.
And it don't matter where we are, and it don't matter what time frame we're in. If we have peace and stability long enough to be able to document our experiments for the people that succeed us, then they're always going to build on top of what we've done until we reach the technological civilization.
Yeah.
I think we're hitting a plateau now due to all of this war. The fact that our society has been hijacked and our government usurped by Jews.
And our genes are being diluted.
Yeah.
And our best men are dying in wars.
We had multiple industrial revolutions in the last 200 years, but the industrial production process really hasn't changed much in the last 50 years, has it? It's been automated a bit, but there hasn't been anything new or terribly innovative.
Well, no, there hasn't, but we really have taken, like the hard disk, the computer hard disk. All right, look at the computer. Now, I remember when the IBM personal computer first came out in 1980, a computer hard disk weighed about 10 pounds and cost $5,000, and it only held 10 megabytes of information.
Only 10 megabytes?
10 megabytes.
Yeah, I remember the 286 only had.
The first ones may have been 5 megabytes, but the one I had was 10 megabytes, and it cost $5,000.
Yeah.
I didn't pay for it. I had it through a place I worked for.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I remember when even the 286 was standard, and it wasn't that long ago, about 10, 15 years ago, and it only had a 250 megabyte hard drive.
Now I got a hard drive that weighs a tenth of what that one weighs.
Yeah.
It's a fourth the size, it's a tenth the weight, and it holds about 10,000 times the data.
Absolutely.
You know, so in a lot of ways, we have made a lot of great advancements, but you're right that we have, it seems that we've slowed down in our ability to conceive new things. But, you know, a lot of that is because of Jewish capitalism.
Well,
the Jews have totally taken over our means of production, and, you know, in the way capital is handled and treated and who it goes to and what's done with it.
Thinking about the computer, the improvements of the computer are wonderful, but most people just use computers as trinkets and toys. We really haven't married these improvements to our production process and to the assembly lines, have we? So our civilization as a whole doesn't seem to be reaping all the benefits that we could be realizing from the improvement in computer technology.
Well, other things are going on because the white Americans stopped getting the R&D money from Wall Street. The Chinaman gets the R&D money from Wall Street now. Most of the big R&D money is going to China and Japan now.
Or
American corporations are being looted and pillaged of their profits, and not enough of it goes back into R&D. In other words, the Jews on Wall Street, they're building up China and India now, and they're done putting money into America. But the Chinaman and the Indian, they don't have the creative capacity that we do. They might be able to learn our mathematics and repeat it in a book and reproduce it in equations, but they don't have the creative tech, the creative mind that we have to marry to the technology in order to create new things. They don't have that. They're never going to have that.
They would never conceive calculus on their own. There's a reason that advanced mathematics came from Western man, the Greeks and the Romans.
Well, absolutely. There's no doubt. And they don't have the creative capacity to create new inventions. They could take and duplicate, but they can't create the things that we've created.
That really shows you the sadness, you know, of seeing a Uyghur. Because to me, there's nothing sadder than seeing a white boy mimicking the 60 IQ beast who's never really contributed anything to society except for crime and AIDS.
Right. It's absolutely horrible. It's the most disgusting thing in the world.
I guess if it wasn't for blacks, a lot of cops would be out of jail, or I'm out of jobs, and a lot of people working in the jail system would be out of jobs.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No doubt. I mean, they're like 70% of the prison population, 60% of the prison population, some ridiculous number. They're 10% of the general population and well over half of the prison population.
And we're told this myth, this lie, that it's because police scrutinize them more and arrest them more, but studies have repeatedly shown for a discretionary issue where if the officer can either ticket or let them go, he's much more likely to let a black offender go with either a ticket or a warning or simply overlook the situation because he doesn't want to be scrutinized and held up as being potentially racist.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you know, when I was growing up and in my adult life and in my own law enforcement career, there were places in Jersey City and Newark that the cops don't even go, that the niggers could do anything they want, and the cops ain't even going in there.
Yeah.
The cops don't go into projects. Somebody has to be dead, and they're just going in to clean the mess up for the cops to go into the projects.
And usually they're heavily armed, and they have a SWAT backup unit, don't they?
Yeah. But the regular patrol, two cops on patrol in Jersey City, they don't go into projects. They ain't going in there. And the niggers in there get away with anything they want. Because
so then it becomes a no-go area, and the government has de facto ceded control to gangs and criminals and whatever other vermin want to move on in and fill the vacuum.
Right. And then the solution they used in Jersey City was to tear the projects down and chase all the niggers into the suburbs. So they polluted the suburbs. And they polluted the white parts of the city. Because that's the only place they could go.
Well, it shouldn't be a shock that everywhere blacks go, it winds up looking like a third world area because they're a third world people. That's what they are.
And white people are never going to get it. I've driven through Newark. I've been to Newark. I've driven through Philadelphia. I've driven through Harlem. I've driven through Bed-Stuy. I spent much time in those places. And they're all war zones, and you don't go without a gun. If you're white, you don't go none of those places without a gun. Whether it's legal or not, you got to have one, or you ain't coming back, especially after the sun goes down.
Yeah.
I noticed that around here, it seems that they love the dark. Whenever I go shopping at the Kmart or the Walmart that's open 24 hours a day, you go around 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning to get a few things that you need, and they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Again, it's there's no difference. There's no disparity between Yahweh's creation and Yahweh's word. And criminals love the dark and hate the light.
Yeah, that's why they call it. They don't even call it here in Atlanta, hardly. They don't even call out of bed till 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They sleep all day. They don't have jobs. And then they're up looting and hanging out on street corners all night harassing people.
But we're told that what is done in darkness to him, it is those who are doing it in light.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
So, truly, as you said, as it's written, there's nothing new under the sun.
Patricia, I thought you were going to call in tonight.
Say what?
I'm talking to Patricia. I thought you were going to call in tonight. I'm picking on her. She's still in the forum. She tells me she loves these open forum sessions, but she don't want to call in.
Have we intimidated her?
No. She's just shy. Now she's probably making believe like she's not at her computer listening to me or something.
Well, tonight was known.
I'm not trying to end it already, but tonight was a pretty good program.
All right. I just wanted to say, it's written in Deuteronomy 28 that we will lose control of our cities to the beast. All right. I'm hearing feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's that's part of the punishments for disobedience.
And today, haven't we lost control of every single city? The great monuments to our civilization, the height of our achievement, they've been lost to our people basically forever. I mean, there's really no recovering Detroit, is there? I mean, you would have to burn it down and build it back up from the ashes of the ruins.
Pretty much, that's the way I look at it.
But that's what Theodore Bilbo, a senator from Mississippi, said something along the lines of, if we were to be crushed and utterly defeated in a war, if our cities were to be razed to the ground, we would rear new sons, and they would carry on our legacy, and they would rebuild from the ashes of the ruins even greater and grander cities. But if our blood should ever be mingled with the blood of the other races, our people would be hopelessly and irreversibly destroyed for all time.
No truer words.
And he was elected U.S. Senator. They refused to see him. They finally sat him in 1947, I believe. They gave him the least prestigious committee assignment. He was in charge of districting for Washington, D.C., and he continually sponsored bill after bill saying that they ought to deport all the blacks to West Africa.
Wow.
They did not like him.
Those Jews up north, they looked at people that they could manipulate and have for cheap labor. And uses a wedge against whites.
Divide and conquer.
It's the Jews in New York and Boston that got the churches to push the abolition of slavery thing. There's no doubt. It's the Jews that were behind all of that.
Well,
it's the House of Rothschild that wanted to divide the country.
Well, they brought the blacks over here, and then they pushed for them being freed, but not freed and released, freed and set loose on an unsuspecting white society.
Yeah.
If they would have said to begin with, hey, let's bring 5 million Negroes over to your country, the whites would never have agreed. So they had to get them here as slaves. We thought we were getting a great deal with all this labor, and then 100 years later they end the scam and now there's blacks everywhere.
Well, that's what the Jews do. That's the modus operandi. The Jews have to cause division in a nation that they want to control. A unified people of the same race in a nation that's autonomous is anathema to the Jew. The Jew has to get a different race in there or do something to cause division in that nation so that he could fragment it, play all the groups against each other, and control it in that way.
Yeah. And that's reality television in a nutshell. The Jew breeds diversity, which breeds contempt.
Absolutely. And it breeds all sorts of problems, actually. It's
they seek to remake society in their image, and their image is one of a disgusting, cosmopolitan, mongrelized mess of a people.
Well, that's true. That's the bottom line, actually. The bastard has to bastardize everything. Everything is impure to the impure.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good Bible quotes like that. Someday I'll get them all together. They may not be exactly like that. I'm just paraphrasing.
Well, they're unclean, so they want to make everything unclean.
Yeah, and I believe there's even prophecies at the end of Isaiah where it says where they're behind the wall eating swine's flesh and so forth at the second advent, more or less. And they more or less question God and say, haven't you become altogether as filthy as we are? You know, it's like they recreated God in their own image of filthiness. Sad in a lot of ways, because that's what I think the Judeo-Christian God really is. It's just a God who tolerates and loves everything that God of the Word truly holds abominable.
Well, if you look at the white man's conceptualization of God and art, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
God is loving, just, and wonderful, powerful. And if you look at the Jews' concept of God, it's either they say G-D or whatever they want to call him doesn't exist. They demean and ridicule their own concept of God, or their God is basically their rabbi or their own ego. I mean, isn't that what the bottom line in Judaism is, that every Jew is his own little God?
Yeah,
the Jews are their own Messiah. The Jews are their own God, period. That's Talmudic.
And all their artwork, they never show any Jewish painter portraying whoever their God happens to be. You know, if you grant for a second that it was the God of Abraham, they never...
In pretense, they follow the parts of the law that are convenient to them to follow. And the they're not allowed to make graven images of God in the Torah. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And they use that to their advantage.
But that doesn't stop them from making images demeaning our God.
Well, of course not.
Yet they claim that our gods are the same.
That's the way they're absolute hypocrites. Our God's definitely not the same.
Our God is Yahweh Elohim, and their God is either their own ego or their father, Satan.
Yeah, the Jews' very existence is hypocritical. Every element of his existence, he's an American when it's convenient to be an American. He's a Jew when it's convenient to be a Jew. When it's convenient to the Jew, being a Jew is a religion. When it's convenient to the Jew, being a Jew is a race.
Well, originally... they were classed as Asiatic, and they lobbied to be counted as white people in this country. And then when it was no longer convenient to be counted as white, they wanted to be counted as Jews or Orientals or whatever. They're chameleons.
Well, absolutely. That's, you know, chameleons are serpents, too.
Yeah. Horse leech.
They're just a very disgusting, vile, wretched people. Truly, they're of their father, the devil. I mean, what more can be said about them?
That's what they are.
Just that Obadiah says every last one from Edom will be purged. And that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's not only in Obadiah. It's in a few places. It's in Malachi. It's in a few places in Scripture.
Yeah. I believe it's even in Habakkuk as well, where it references Edom.
Interesting. Well, the Christian gospel.
Yeah. Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated.
Now, I've heard some evangelicals say that means loved and less. It doesn't really mean hated, but how could it mean that? They offer no explanation.
Yes, Patricia, I'm a glutton for punishment.
Well, the way I look at that is, if you love less, that, well, loving less means to hate. So, you know. I don't know.
I'm staying on tonight until you call in, Patricia.
Are you really?
She's picking on. I got four shows this weekend. She's picking on me for still being here.
I have four shows this weekend as well.
I lose my voice quick for some reason. I don't know why, but it gets raspy really quick. It seems like it to me, though. I don't know.
I normally keep water around, and I drink water occasionally, but that didn't work out so well with my cat. He knocked my water over.
Suck down tea and chocolate throughout the whole program.
Nice. Yeah, that's the weather changing. I don't know about you guys, but here in Atlanta, it's cold.
We had snow on the ground when I got up this morning. I put the pictures up on a forum I have that I'm the only member of. I like it that way.
There you go. That way the conversations are always, you know,
Well, it's really for my business, but my business is just getting off the ground, and it might be years before it gets anywhere.
You have an instant consensus.
Yeah.
I just put the link on the screen. We had snow on the ground. I took two pictures and put them on the forum. On that
38 degrees.
Oops,
wow.
That's the wrong IRL anyway. That's the wrong URL. I screwed up. I mean, that's a website I have too, but I got to put this in front of it.
But I tell you what's funny, man. Here in Georgia about 2 years ago, they were crying it was a drought, it was the end of the world. And it's kind of interesting to see here in the year 2009, they're crying it's a flood, it's the end of the world. It goes back and forth.
They can't make up their minds. What I think was really interesting about weather, when Katrina hit New Orleans, it hit 2 days before that huge Southern Gay Festival. I think it was called like the Southern Decadence Parade or the Southern Decadence Convention, whatever it was.
Oh, wow.
All the queers from around the South would gather in New Orleans and do their orgies. That had to be canceled. And then all the refugees flee to Houston, and then Rita hits Houston. So I said to one of my friends that, you know, that's God telling them you can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah, for real. Well, yeah, I'd heard that before about the Southern Decadence thing, and I noticed that was never in the news. Oh, they couldn't mention that, because to mention that would mean that God's controlling the weather, you know?
And everything happens for a reason. There's no such thing as a random hurricane.
Yeah. And I know Scripture clearly says he controls the hurricanes. So, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of these people, they don't have faith in God at all. So it's so wishy-washy for them. It's always the end of the world. I was even saying when the drought was here, I was like, watch, in a few years, you know. And sure enough, now it's flooding, and you know, the president's asking for money, and it's crazy.
I'd just like to be able to control where the lightning and the tornadoes go for a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. You could fill up, like, Atlanta Stadium, just giving away free chicken and watermelon, and it start dropping lightning bolts.
Really fry that chicken.
Anyway, the gay games, they used to hold it in Chicago. They're going to hold it in Cleveland. The mayor said the city's going to make millions, and it's not going to cost a whole lot, and it's going to be great for the city, and it'll put Cleveland on the map.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what, the HIV capital of the Midwest?
Yeah. I was surprised to hear that Disney still holds a gay day in Southern California.
Mm.
Like, Disneyland will close down, and just it's completely one whole day where fags flood the park.
Well, it is owned by Michael Eisner. In fact, Walt Disney must be spinning in his grave since Jews have taken over his empire.
Yeah, for real.
For children to have fun in a wholesome environment. Jews prefer everything, don't they?
Totally. I know. I think Walt would even be shocked to see how Disney's turned into, like, a huge force in the multicultural campaign, at least targeted towards children. Because, man, I mean, really since Fox and the Hound, it seems like everyone from Beauty and the Beast to Pocahontas to Lion King is all about miscegenation.
Absolutely. And, in fact, in some of those, they overlaid certain soundtracks where if you slow down the movie, you can hear subliminal messages. At one part in Aladdin, if you slow it down, you can hear him saying that all good girls take their clothes off.
Oh, wow.
So they put subliminal messages. They also have all sorts of phallic symbols. If you look at the sky or if you look at the way the lighting is in the movie, you can see various sexual images. And in one movie, they even spell out the word sex
in
class in the background in a Disney movie. So it's all degenerate. It's just, you know, more Jewish mind games.
Where if you have a Jew, you're going to have degeneracy. It's a fact of life.
You know, wherever you have smoke, there's going to be fire.
Wherever you have a rabbi, you already have a crime.
Either a crime or a conspiracy to commit a crime.
Yeah, that's the worst thing. You know, I've read, I don't know if it's true or not, I've read that in ancient Ireland, foreigners were not even allowed to talk to the people.
Wow.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
No external influences whatsoever. That's the way it should be. I don't know if that's true of Ireland, but that's the way it should be.
then Ireland's a perfect country to point out as far as the liberal mindset, where they like saying that the reason these Negroes commit so much crime is because of their environment. I guarantee you, if you, you know, check the statistics, the crime rates in Ireland versus Detroit, you'd see a huge disparity.
And have the Irish suffered at the hands of the English?
Yeah.
The last few years, they've been flooding Ireland with Negroes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh wow. Like everywhere.
Yeah, are we going to press on with other topics, or should I go get a glass of water and take a bathroom break? Or if I do that and I come back, everyone will be gone.
Yeah, I need a bathroom break myself.
Yeah, definitely. I probably need to hop off, fellas.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how long I want. We could do this again tomorrow night.
All right, or maybe we can just. We're probably prolong the Hitler show and then have a chat after that, won't we? I'm sure.
Yeah, we could do it again Sunday too. I mean, I'll hang out all weekend. I don't care.
Excellent.
There's nothing better to do but spend time with you guys, people in the forum. I wish more of them would call in, Patricia.
So that either means I'm really great or I'm really cruddy, right? If you've got nothing better to do than hang out with me, either I'm fortunate or that's a slur.
Well, you know, I always have something to do. It's not a matter of not having idle time. I have no idle time. But if every project gets pushed back another 2 hours, what's the difference when none of them are going to get finished till next year anyway?
Yeah, for real.
You're definitely from the South, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm a New Yorker. I mean, I was born and raised in, I was born in Virginia, actually. I was a Navy baby. But, I mean, I spent my whole life in Jersey City.
Okay, because I heard that the Southern attitude is, why do it today if you can do it tomorrow? And my attitude is, get it done, get it done, get it done.
Well, no, but, I was born in Norfolk, Virginia, Fish. That makes me that makes me a citizen of Virginia by birth.
Well, wasn't Virginia considered a southern state, though? Didn't they
fight? Yes, Virginia's a southern state.
There you go.
It was the capital of the Confederacy.
Norfolk is basically right in the greater D.C. area, isn't it?
No, Norfolk is in southern Virginia.
Oh, okay.
It's the other side of the state, you know, the bottom of the state.
Okay, near North Carolina.
Yeah.
All right. It's
a big Navy. My father was in the Navy, and he met my mother there, but my mother's from Massachusetts. Her father had lost his job in a shoe factory when it closed down and moved to China or wherever the hell it moved to. And he had a brother in Norfolk that had a cement business, so they moved there so that he could work for his brother. My mother ended up, but her family was in Massachusetts since this 1600s.
So if it wasn't for Jewish outsourcing, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, basically. You're right. Jewish outsourcing.
That's how God uses the devil sometimes, you know, to his advantage. No, it just goes to show, you know, we've got on your side.
Yeah, right. My old man joined the Navy and ended up meeting my mother. Guess it had to happen somehow.
Absolutely.
Okay,
well,
guys.
If that's it for now, I'm going to go tend to some ice cream and brownies and then do a little reading off the bed.
There you go. Ice cream and brownies. That sounds good. I'm going to have some tacos.
I bake a lot.
I got to answer Fist real quick. Fist, the idiots that come up with Bible codes in the Bible, they're the idiots that just can't read the Bible and figure out what it means. Mm-hmm. So they have to come up with all these trying to say that it says what it don't say.
I mean, why would we need a hidden matrixy code that if you take the second letter of every word going down at this diagonal angle, blah, 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 the Bible talks about how there's going to be a Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah, right. They claim to understand all that, but then they just can't understand that it says that those who deny the Christ, they are the Antichrist.
Yeah.
They can't understand the plain words, but they'll understand all these intricate codes.
They claim they know calculus, but they don't know basic geometry or 1 plus 1 equals 2.
Yeah, really. They're all clowns. They're all Jews. They're all clowns.
And most of these Bible code people are rabbis.
I don't doubt it.
Watch History Channel documentaries, and they just interview rabbi after rabbi after rabbi, and they've got the hat on, the jacket, and they're talking about, well, if you read the Bible code this way, going down the matrix, it talks about the founding of the State of Israel in 1948.
Yeah, right. Well, they don't want to know what it says, so they pervert it. That's, it's only another way of Freudian psychobabble applied to the Bible.
Then if we were to thumb over the Genesis 3:15 or John 8:44 and say, well, let's see what it says in plain language about who you people are.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, no.
Okay, yeah. Guys, I'm going to call it tonight. I got to pee so bad.
It's been fun.
I'll see you tomorrow at 8, and God bless, and thanks, everybody, for suffering along together with us. And I'll see you all. Pastor Visser, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless, Lord, brother. It's been a pleasure.